Hi, I'm Sharon Hyman. This is number 0234, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0234. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Allie C., who is a professional cuddler from New York City. What process does she go through to get clients?
Someone will fill out my new client form, and they'll give me those things that I've asked for, links to their different sites. And then we have a phone conversation. And one of the things that they tell me in the new client form is why they're doing this. And most of these reasons have to do with not getting enough nurturing as a child, going through a very stressful period. So I know that their motivations are good. And then after I speak to them on the phone, I have a really clear idea of whether or not I want to work with them.
Bart King, author of The Big Book of Superheroes. Who is his audience for the book?
I think it's really more for younger readers. So this is kind of what might be called a middle grade book. So a precocious 8-year-old might be able to enjoy it. Otherwise, maybe 9 to 13-year-olds. Regardless, I think, of whether they like comic books and superheroes already or not, the idea is that it's a humorous guide to becoming a superhero and then sort of avoiding the subsequent pitfalls that will be in their way.
Doreen Pengrass, author of Chocolatour, A Quest for the World's Best Chocolate.
First, I was going to do a wine travel book, but there'd been a lot of books done about wine travel already, but there'd never been a book done about fine chocolate. I started investigating it, and I realized that this could be a new niche for people who appreciate fine artisanal chocolate. You have to go to it, because it does not travel well, because it doesn't have a long shelf life. Once you start investigating the world of fine chocolate, you realize how big it is and how exciting it can be to go and meet these people that are making it and try their creations.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0234, was Sharon Hyman, who is a filmmaker, and her latest film, by the way, is called A Partners, Living Happily Ever Apart. And you could also check out her website at neverbloomers.com. That's neverbloomers.com. And of course, you'll find a link to her website when you go to the What's On page for this show, which Sharon just mentioned. Notice how it all goes full circle, which is 0234. Thank you very much, Sharon, for doing the guest slate for this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Well, police responded to reports of screaming coming from a home in Maine, but they didn't find a victim of domestic violence as they feared. Instead, they found an amorous pig. State police say a woman called last week after hearing what she believed was a fight coming from a neighbor's home in the town of China. A caller said she heard screaming and thought it was a domestic assault. 4 state troopers responded and talked to the neighbor. The neighbor explained that she raises pigs and the screaming was coming from an overjoyed male pig who had been placed in a pen with 5 sows in heat. I think many of us can sympathize. Police say there was no assault and no disturbance other than a screaming male pig. Well, somebody's making bacon. Yeah. Anyway, when police in Northborough, Massachusetts spotted a car driving erratically, they gave chase. The car eventually stopped and the driver jumped out, hopped a guardrail, and ran into the woods. Police followed the man's tracks in the snow until they found Troy Prockett, age 37, perched in a tree. When asked to come down, Prockett refused with very slurred speech. He then asked if we had caught the guy who was driving and climbed higher up into the tree, police say. When it was pointed out that there were only one set of tracks leading from the car to the tree, Prockett allegedly said the driver had carried him there. Prockett then continued speaking about what a good guy he was and rambling on about being an owl. Prockett refused to climb down and instead climbed even higher, shaking the branches and saying, "Look, it's snowing!" Eventually, firefighters used a bucket truck to lift an officer 30 feet in the air to reach Prockett and arrest him. He faces multiple charges, including a third offense drunk driving charge. Honestly, if this guy can climb 30 feet into a tree while drunk, can you imagine just what he can do sober? Wow. Meanwhile, the City Council of Wausau, Wisconsin, speaking of drinking, has voted to overturn the veto by the mayor of a new law that requires bartenders to stay sober on the job. Under the new ordinance, the city's more than 500 licensed barkeeps and their supervisors have to maintain a blood alcohol level of 0.04% or lower, or half of the legal limit for drivers. Proponents say bartenders can't very well keep patrons from drinking too much if they're drunk themselves, and police say that about half the incidents they respond to at bars involve a drunk bartender. It was the first time the council overturned a veto by the mayor, who had been in office for 10 years. Would you like to know what the mayor's name is? I'm not making this up. His name is Jim Tipple. Can't make that up, folks. And to think that he didn't recuse himself for a conflict of interest, just on name alone. Yeah. Anyway, police in Norwalk, Connecticut, responded to an accident when a woman spun out and struck a guardrail. Officers had difficulty getting to the scene because the road, which included an S-curve on a hill, was covered in a thick layer of ice. After police arrived, two other vehicles lost control and collided. Investigation revealed that Alfredo Bahena Benitez, age 34, was servicing a swimming pool nearby and had allegedly drained it using a hose run to the top of the hill. And he did this in freezing weather. Yeah, police considered Alfredo responsible for the icy road and thus the accidents and charged him with reckless endangerment. Well, running water on a freezing road, I guess because of that stupidity, and I didn't make him the idiot of the day, although I could have, but because of that stupidity, he'll be chilling in jail for some time. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, police in New York were keeping a special watch on sex traders in the run-up to the Super Bowl. Bronx detectives were looking around online when they discovered a supposedly 15-year-old girl being offered and agreed to meet her. Now, when they arrived at the designated hotel, they found a 15-year-old girl who had told them that her mother had brought her there from Florida and was waiting for her in another hotel. Well, detectives went there to the other hotel. And the mom, Yolanda Ostoloza, age 39, of Hollywood, Florida, admitted that we came up here to work and make money with a pimp, and I knew it was for escorting and prostitution. She was okay with her daughter doing that sort of work, you figure? Apparently, she was. She said, I thought my daughter was just going to do the fetish stuff, she said. Ooh, talk about mother of the year. They charged her with promoting prostitution and endangering the welfare of a child. Now, you know, from my perspective, it's a really sad reality of this Super Bowl-related story that in 10 years, it'll be totally forgotten. You won't remember I mentioned this story. It won't be brought up. It will not be discussed in any way, shape, or form in connection to the Super Bowl. Yet here we are still talking about Janet Jackson's nipple all these years later. Priorities, people. Priorities. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? There is a woman in New York City who is a professional cuddler. Her name is Allie C., and she started a small business dubbed Cuddle U NYC. She hosts clients in her Manhattan apartment where they come to be spooned and held. Allie joins us on the line right now via Skype-to-Skype communications from New York. Hi, Allie.
Hey, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
So right from the beginning, how did this all get started for you?
Well, oh my gosh, I don't know how far you want to go back, but I will say that the catalyst was actually seeing Jackie, who runs the Snuggery in Rochester, New York. I read about her about a year ago, and I've been a student of inner bonding, which is a sort of a healing modality that helps people deal with their core wounds from childhood and so forth. And I really realized that there was a need to incorporate compassionate and loving touch along with the inner bonding. So when I read about Jackie, I just thought it was a natural fit, and no one was doing it in the city, so I decided to go ahead and do it.
Okay, so now, as I mentioned in the introduction, you do this in your own Manhattan apartment, correct?
I do, yes.
Is there any concerns for your safety? Because I know, I believe everything you say is on the up and up, and this is really a service that you're providing, but there are some people out there who might take advantage of the situation.
Well, this is true, but that would be the case in any business where the person works from home. I have a lot of safeguards in place. There's a very strict screening process that my clients go through, which includes giving me profiles to their LinkedIn profile and their Facebook profiles, as well as work information. They also sign a waiver where they understand exactly what is. It helps manage their expectations so they know what is allowed, what isn't. Of course, absolutely no sexual contact of any kind is allowed. I take a photo of their driver's license, and I also have a doorman, and there are cameras in the elevator, so the chance of anybody sneaking in, to take advantage of the situation is non-existent, really. I'm absolutely not worried. There's enough safeguards that I feel totally comfortable. And I'll also tell you that I really get a lot of information from the person. I only progress with scheduling a cuddle. Someone will fill out my new client form, and they'll give me those things that I've asked for, links to their different sites. And then we have a phone conversation. And one of the things that they tell me in their in the new client form is why they're doing this. And most of these reasons have to do with not getting enough nurturing as a child, going through a very stressful period. So I know that their motivations are good. And then after I speak to them on the phone, I have a really clear idea of whether or not I want to work with them. Be mindful that I don't schedule every single person who contacts me. They have to go through my vetting process first.
What does it cost to have a cuddle session?
Well, I wanted to do a few things differently. There are a couple of other professional cuddlers out there apart from Jackie. So I wanted to do a few different things. Now, the other cuddlers provide straight cuddles that are based on time, 45 minutes or 60 minutes. I charge $60 for a 45-minute cuddle and $80 for a 60-minute cuddle. But we also do some other things that that can be a little bit more fun and do take more time and do cost more.
Is there conversation during the cuddling? Is it quiet, or does it depend on the client's needs, so to speak?
It absolutely depends on the client's needs. And first of all, let me just set the scene for you. I have a studio apartment, and it is very softly lit. There is soothing music playing. It's a bit like going into a spa. Everything is uncluttered and clean and tidy, and people feel very cozy and at home here. Now, whether or not somebody wants to, so it's a very relaxing environment. Someone can just come and cuddle. Or we can talk about things, and because of the inner bonding work that I do, we often do discuss relationship issues, and we try to get to the root of the problem, which is pretty much always based in some sort of childhood trauma that they've experienced.
Do both men and women avail of your services?
Absolutely, yes. And, the women clients who I have, we tend to be more focused on the inner bonding. We tend to be more focused on what I call remothering or reparenting, where I'm able to mirror them to them compassionate and loving behavior so that they can then learn how to do this for themselves. It's a way of developing their own loving inner parents. But also there are women who just want to cuddle too. And, they miss having their sisters around, or they miss having their mother around, and they don't have someone to cuddle with, and because it is completely non-sexual, it works with men and women.
Even though it is, as you say, completely non-sexual, are there people who don't understand it? And by that I mean, I'm sure there are people who come to you who are clients who are not single.
This is true. I have married clients and clients who are in relationships, and but that doesn't mean they're coming to me because they're looking for something sexual. they often are not, they're often at a crossroads in a relationship, and they are not, it's not that they're not having sex with their partner, it's that they are not experiencing warmth and compassion from their partner. So I kind of help them, in addition to cuddling with them, I kind of walk them through some exercises that they can do to take care of themselves when they are in that position where they feel that their partner is being unloving toward them.
But even taking the sexual question out of the equation, I'm just getting at the fact that somebody might get, a partner might get bent out of shape that their relationship partner is going to somebody else to be cuddled because either they can't or won't do it right. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure that's probably true. I know I don't know how I would feel if that were the case, but that's really between those two people, and that's something that they need to learn to communicate about and work through. I encourage that, actually, of my clients to voice their needs, and, you know, they'll often tell me that there are reasons that they have voiced their needs and they're still not being met, but I have no control over what a significant other may feel. That's up to my client to worry about, really.
Do you have regular clients, people who come back for regular intervals?
I do. Yes. And yeah, and it's wonderful because you do build a relationship, a very trusting relationship, and it becomes even more therapeutic in that case.
Are you in a relationship?
No, I'm not. I'm not in a relationship, but I am dating.
Okay. And when people you're dating hear what you do, they're comfortable with it? They have no concerns or qualms?
You know, this has really taken off since last week when the New York Daily News article ran. I do tell them what I do. They look at my website, but they haven't seen, I don't know that they've seen the video coverage, and which doesn't matter if they do or not. I think it's pretty good. But I haven't had anyone say, well, I can't date you because of this. In fact, they're curious and they ask me questions, or they say it's a great thing. You know, I tend to date more open-minded and liberal people, by the way.
Do you find it's almost sad in a way that we now live in a society where some people might find this odd? I mean, I remember the days when I was a kid, you could get a hug from a teacher, and now schools don't even allow that.
Right, we've sexualized everything. It's crazy. It's just insane that we can't express affection any longer without fear of a lawsuit or a sexual harassment charge. Yeah, and it's, you know, what that tells me is that people are more disconnected from themselves as well as from each other than they ever have been in our entire human history.
And nowadays with social media and entities like the very one we're talking on, Skype, there's even less physical contact.
This is true. In fact, tonight I'm speaking at a symposium that's directly related to that. You know, how our relationships between people are evolving with the advent of technology, and it's so true. We can close ourselves off so easily. But it's not just, you know, I see people on the train all the time. It'll be a couple, right? And they're both on their cell phone. They're both on their mobile and their smartphone, and you know, they're not paying any attention to each other. They're not tuned into the other person or the people around them. And yeah, it's kind of scary, actually.
When people go to your website, which is cuddleunyc.com, what will they find?
They will find, well, they'll find information about exactly what is involved in the cuddle. They'll find an FAQ that outlines what to expect. They'll find my packages and pricing. They'll find a little bit about me, and they will find blog posts where I try to post about how physical affection impacts our neurological development, our neurological health, as well as our physiological health, and just different aspects about that. But there's a lot of really good information in my blog as well.
It's almost sad to say that there is a need for the kind of business you offer, but on the other side of that coin, I'm glad that there is someone like yourself out there to supply what is so needed.
Yeah, it is a bit sad, but people are quite receptive to it, and I'm just happy that I can, you know, I'm in the business of healing and helping people, so I'm really happy that I can do that.
Allie, thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Oh, thank you, Peter.
Professional cuddler, Allie C. You'll find her website at cuddleunyc.com. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0234, and you'll find the links to Allie's website.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
This is The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Pay very close attention. There could be a test leader.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to Bart King, the author of The Big Book of Superheroes. Plus, we'll meet the author of Chocolatour, A Quest for the World's Best Chocolate. And, of course, we do indeed have an idiot of the day and much more Stuff File news right here, right now on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, this is a call that actually came in to 911. You need the cops here right away because if he shoots me, I'm going to run him over. That's what a man told a 911 dispatcher. The caller was trying to deliver a card to Lewis Maloney at his home in Deltona, Florida, but Maloney apparently had an issue with his new ride, which was being delivered from Montana. He claimed it had a small crack in the window and pulled out a gun and shot at the delivery man. He's crazy. He done shot at me. I'm scared for my life. He's coming again. He done shot at me? Anyway, that's what he said. That's what he said before he hung up the phone, by the way. When deputies arrived, Maloney, who was 72, allegedly admitted he fired a shot to scare the driver, but the driver was not injured. Maloney was charged with felony aggravated assault and delivered to jail. Wow. Complained because there was a crack in his window. A small crack in his window, right? Yeah. Well, there's definitely a crack somewhere, that's for sure. We have two stories now that I'm putting together that show some of the bizarre rules involving safety in Britain, which we often lovingly refer to on this program as the nanny state. Story number one. Britain's Royal Mail announced in December that it would stop delivery to Jeff and Sheila White's cottage in Carnforth because the carrier was frightened of cows. Mrs. White said he was just lazy in that when the cows are present, the carrier had to open and close a gate to get to their cottage. And story number two, a 65-year-old school crossing guard resigned in October from a job he said he liked because officials at Manandun Vale Primary School had ordered him to stop playfully high-fiving students. Guards, the school said, need both arms free to hold signs and make proper signals. Wow. You know, rules are rules. Even when they're dumb. Elsewhere, in December, after Carmen Riatagui, age 34, was arrested for DUI in Readington Township, New Jersey, and was too impaired to drive home, she called Nina Petraka, age 23, who arrived at the police station impaired herself and was thus arrested for DUI. And both women then called Ryan Hogan, age 33, to take them home, but he also was impaired when he arrived and was arrested. You know, some people are just completely unclear of the concept of drunk driving. Completely unclear. Anyway, got a couple of stories here, kind of, shall we call it, leading economic indicators into terrorism these days. Okay, story number one. In November, the Army of Islam, which are Syrian rebels, announced via a dazzling, fully functional website that it had job vacancies in the field of graphic design, photography, printing, journalism, reporting, and media promotion and programming. The anti-Assad force already has a Facebook page featuring videos of alleged military victories. And story number two, Somalia's coastal pirates have peaked in 2009 in boat captures and may now be laying low only because of the familiar business problem of inventory management. A November analysis by Quartz showed the pirates with such a surplus of hijacked vessels, still with earnings potential, that they would likely wind those down before taking to the seas again. Yes, everything must go. Wow. It now looks like you need an MBA to be a terrorist. This is big business. Moving right along, a group of legal prostitutes in the Netherlands, where, again, prostitution is legal, began a campaign in December to have their occupation officially termed as dangerous and physically challenging, that they should be allowed, as soccer players are, to save in tax-free pension funds. They carried out difficult physical work, their lawyer said, and their careers are, likewise, short-lived, much better suited for the young. Furthermore, he pointed out, prostitutes are not able, post-career, to earn money coaching or by endorsements. Well, have any of them thought of going into play-by-play? Just saying. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a team from the Czech Republic, a team of researchers led by Vlastimil Hart, were writing in the Frontiers of Zoology in December, and they reported that dogs, among a few mammals, dealing with nature's call, spontaneously align their body axis with the Earth's magnetic field. Now, to reach that conclusion, the researchers said they observed 70 dogs of 37 different breeds during defecation for a total of 1,893 observations and urination for a total of 5,582 observations over a 2-year period. Boy, you really have to love your job, huh? Under those circumstances, really have to love your job. Wow. Anyway, getting to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Bart King is back on the show again. He's the prolific author of such books as The Big Book of Girl Stuff, The Big Book of Spy Stuff, The Big Book of Gross Stuff, The Pocket Guide to Mischief, and Cute, A Guide to All Things Adorable. His latest epic is The Big Book of Superheroes. And Bart joins us on the line from Portland, Oregon via Skype to Skype communications. Hi, Bart.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on the program with us once again. So the Big Book of Superheroes. Aren't you worried about giving away secrets superheroes might want kept?
Well, I'm willing to take that risk in the interest of literacy and bad jokes.
Okay. How did you decide to come up on this one? I mean, with all the things that you've done a variety of books. Why superheroes this time around?
Well, there's kind of a built-in natural interest factor. It's interesting. It seems like there's a 2 or 3 blockbuster superhero movies coming out every year now, right? And I don't know, you know, exactly how things are in your neck of the woods, but we seem to have a thriving comic book community here in Portland. So, and it's actually, I should also mention, maybe my wife worked for Dark Horse Comics for a number of years, and I've had an interest myself as just kind of a casual fan. So the time had come.
Is your
tone that in the proper superhero, the time had come. That looks kind of cool, actually. This like this looming fist coming out of the screen. All right.
Is your book something that is a companion to someone who is a comic book fan, or is it for someone who is not a comic book fan?
Right. I think it's really more for younger readers. So this is kind of what might be called a middle grade book. So a precocious 8-year-old might be able to enjoy it. Otherwise, maybe 9 to 13-year-olds. Regardless, I think of whether they like comic books and superheroes already or not. The idea is that it's a humorous guide to becoming a superhero and then sort of avoiding the subsequent pitfalls that will be in their way. So I talk about famous and obscure superheroes both to sort of illustrate my points, but I didn't intend it for the fan people, shall we say. I don't want to say fanboys, that seems awfully gender exclusive. So that's kind of the overview. And you know, I was a middle school teacher for many years, and that when I write really on any topic, I'm sort of aiming for that reluctant reader, oftentimes a boy in that age group, say from, let's just say maybe from 6th to 8th grade.
So I understand in your book you can find important stuff like the perfect superhero name. We never spend much time dealing on how superheroes get their name, so I'm glad this is something you've touched on.
Right. Yes. So how does one find success? You know, you got to be original, I guess, first of all. And there's a lot of pitfalls here. You know, the obvious thing to do is to combine your superpower with your gender. You know, so for example, Stinky Boy, you can probably see the problem with that name, the boy, because, you know, once you kind of identify yourself as Lightning Lad or Bouncing Boy or Saturn Girl, what are you going to do in a few years? You know, you're going to be Bouncing Young Adult or Bouncing Geezer. Actually, Bouncing Geezer sounds kind of cool, but generally speaking, you don't want to get hemmed in by that. You know, the Human Torch actually had, I thought, a good approach to a superhero name. Simply take the word human and then put it in front of your superpower. So, you know, Human Torch is taken, but, you know, you could choose the Human Flashlight, Human Candle, Human Nightlight. Actually, I think Human Nightlight would impress the criminals nicely. So, you know, yeah, I have to say, though, you know, you actually have a name. You know, in some cases, I think a person's proper name could translate well to superhero name. So, for example, Peter Anthony Holder, you know, you've got, it rolls off the tongue. It has almost a, you know, kind of a royal feel to it, you know. So I can imagine the PAH emblazoned, you know, with a searchlight on a cloud above the city, you know. Pa, the mayor is calling out, you know. if you had a brother, I don't know if you have a brother. Do you have a brother,
Peter? No, I do not.
Okay, well, let's imagine a universe in which you do. If his name were Melvin Edward Holder, this would not be as impressive, right? Because people would look up and see the meh, you know, on the cloud above the city. Not really a call to action, I think. But yeah, so I actually devote an entire chapter to names and selecting the proper one. And if the reader is still stuck at the end, I just kind of put this block of ideas, you know, adjectives and proper nouns, and just go ahead and combine them, and you'll come up with something pretty good. I don't want to dwell on this overly long, but, you know, there are three fatal name mistakes that can be made. I think one I've seen is when the person substitutes the letter Y for vowels. That's kind of like, you know, like Kid Flash, but it's like KYD. It just doesn't really work. And so I talk about some of those. You know, another problem that you see a lot is overuse of the letter X, which is, you know, because of the popularity of the X-Men, smashing together little used letters like X, Q, and Z to kind of give that exotic feel. So I go on at length about these very important topics.
It's funny you mentioned my name, because I always thought that your name sounded really cool.
Right, Bart King. Yeah, sounds like a kidney punch, doesn't it? So if I go with my full name, as you do, so I'd be Bartholomew Edward King, which sounds kind of like a superhero falling down a stairway, I think. But yeah, well, you're very kind, so thank you for that, and I'll take that to heart.
I also know you that you also talk about how to avoid costume wedgie, which, by the way, going back to the name situation, yes, I would assume is not a problem for Captain Underpants.
Right. Well, you know, this is the thing. The easiest way to avoid costume wedgies is simply to wear your underwear on the outside, or exclusively wear diapers. Those are the quickest solutions to that problem. But you're right. So costumes present a whole realm of challenges in and of itself. You know, so I think the tendency is for people to kind of think maybe leather would be a good choice. It does, of course, provide good protection. But, you know, there's the cheese factor. It just looks cheesy if you have too much of it. So, you know, spandex, I think it's what we, or Lycra and spandex, artificial fiber blends, I think we associate with superheroes. They're stretchy, they fit, they're form-fitting, and that's good. In the book, I talk about what I think is the ultimate fabric, which would be kind of a 50-50-50 blend of spandex, Kevlar, and Nomex. Of course, Kevlar is designed to stop bullets. Nomex is what firefighters wear for protection. It's a fire-resistant fabric. And so if you can get that blend, you're in good shape. The best costume would be bulletproof, flameproof, waterproof, and laserproof. But that's a lot of pressure, so what are you going to do? The fabric should also be pressure-proof, by the way. I devote an entire chapter. And then, of course, there's the whole issue of insignias, colors. You know, do you want to go drab? Usually I think bright colors are probably the way to go, although it does make a more inviting target for laser cannons and the like. So, yeah, there's so much here. There's so much here to think about, Peter, that thank goodness I had a big book to stretch out in with it.
I think you're just giving me an idea what I'd like to do in my next life. I think coming back as somebody who designs costumes for superheroes could be quite lucrative, although the problem with that would be they're kind of a one-off, because I don't see them having too many costumes. I guess if you really want to have a regular customer for a long period of time, you want to make the clothes for the Incredible Hulk.
That's right. So that's funny you mentioned that. The Incredible Hulk is his own special section in this book, because especially when he started out, he invariably he would, you know, the Bruce Banner would go through his transformation. All his clothes are ripped to shreds and disappear, except of course for the magical purple pants, because it didn't matter what color pants Bruce Banner had been wearing, they would be purple when the Hulk was done. I was mysterious. They have since stopped doing that, but of course the Hulk does still wear pants. We don't know what that fabric is made of, but it's got awfully stretchy abilities.
Now, do superheroes have to kind of audition their villains? Because, you know, you're only as good as your villain.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, Stan Lee has a famous quote about how, you know, superheroes need, you know, basically three things. And one of those three things is a supervillain or an archenemy of some kind. And so I actually, you know, it's funny you asked me earlier about the genesis of the book, and the first chapter that I wrote, and I sort of thought it was going to be a book about supervillains because, you know, let's face it, there is a certain fascination there with the forces of evil with a capital E. So, yeah, there's a couple, three chapters about villains, where they come from, you know, trying to understand their frame of mind, how best to thwart them, and so forth. So, yeah.
Has doing the research for this book given you an idea of what kind of superhero you'd like to be, or would you rather be a villain?
Well, the dark side is tempting, but I'm gonna stick with the, you know, forces of good for now, at least during this interview. You know, and I think that I'd probably be, if given my druthers, I think I'd probably be one of the more retiring superheroes, maybe kind of working from a back room, I'd be a great sidekick for Professor X, you know, maybe running and getting him something to drink, you know, bringing him things and stuff like that. So I think I'd make actually a better sidekick than a focal point of either a superhero or a supervillain. And by the way, you know, I wanted to, I don't want to neglect this, you know, I was thinking about both my role in superherodom and what it would be, namely a sidekick. In your case, though, you cut a grander swath, I think, and so I wonder if I could impose on you and presume to ask you just a quick four-question test or quiz. Let's think of it as a pop quiz, a super pop quiz. Just a few questions about superhero background and history and some thoughts about it, and we could just blaze through it very quickly and see how you do, and, you know.
Okay.
You may not even need this book, as far as I can see. So here's my first question for you.
Right. Okay.
If you got Spidey strength, and we know what that is, you know, you're bitten by a radioactive spider, what might you notice about yourself? Now, this is Spidey strength specifically.
Spidey strength?
Yeah, like Spider-Man.
What would I notice with myself specifically? The fact that I have right now the best peripheral vision one could ever ask for.
The multiple eyes, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not bad. This is one of the more interesting things that I found was, I think because scientists, I think as children, oftentimes had a fascination with comics and superheroes, they love studying these matters. And so I was reading about an entomologist and arachnologist were talking about this. They found that in real life, if a human had the strength of a spider, they would notice nothing because spiders actually are not powerful at all for their size or for anything. A human with spider strength would not notice the difference, apparently. So there's a spider's, you know, special abilities or its venom and its web. So peripheral vision, though, will give you half credit on that one. So,
okay.
That's your first one. Okay. How about this? Question number two. This superhero surprised readers by shooting and killing a criminal in his very first appearance in his own comic book. I'll give you three choices here, and you can choose the one you think might be it. Was it Bullet Man, Batman, or The Flash, who shot and killed a criminal in the very first issue of this comic book?
I guess Bullet Man.
You would think Bullet Man, but actually it was Batman. Yeah, okay. He was a murderer from the word go. So, let's keep going.
We got to be quick. Running out of time.
Okay. My last question then is Superman was described as someone who could leap tall buildings in a single bound. Approximately how high was that? Would you say 1,500 feet? 100 feet or 700 feet?
1,500. What was the, not 1,500, what 1500, were the other two?
100 or 700 feet?
700.
700 feet. With the score, then, that's correct the answer. So with a score of 1.5 points for three questions, I think that you actually are not, you're not going to be a sidekick. You can continue with your superpowered career.
Darn it, I've always wanted to be a sidekick, though. The book is called The Big Book of Superheroes. It's now on pre-order. How can people find it?
It's available online at all the usual places. Independent booksellers will have it. Libraries will have it. It is available on Amazon.com, CA, UK, all the usual places. So, yeah, it'll be out in mid-March.
Thank you very much, Bart. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Peter.
Bart King, author of The Big Book of Superheroes. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0234, and you'll find links to Bart's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. This week is the 205th birthday of one of the most respected leaders our nation has ever known, Abraham Lincoln. While most of us remember Lincoln as one of our greatest presidents, many believe he was also one of the wisest lawyers ever to practice law in America, too. Oh, he lost his share of cases, but his high ideals and his refusal to sue another person unless it was a last resort earned him great respect. Listen to what he said to his fellow lawyers on the topic of suing another person, and I quote, "Discourage litigation. Persuade your neighbors to compromise whenever you can. Point out to them how the nominal winner is often a real loser, in fees, expenses, and waste of time." End of quote. What wonderful advice. Now, let's be fair. Lincoln knew that people will have disputes from time to time, and sometimes lawsuits are necessary. But he also believed that there are better ways of resolving disputes than in court. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
Informed or entertained? Hey, you're doing both. This is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about chocolate. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day. But right now, I got one more Stuff File news story to share with you. DUI charges are bad enough. DUI charges while driving a state snowplow are liable to make a few headlines. That's the predicament of 56-year-old Thomas Henderson of West Virginia, who got pulled over by a deputy atop a mountain late one night. The deputy stopped the plow because one of its headlights was out, but then he smelled alcohol. Henderson failed a field sobriety test when he blew a 0.09, which is above the state's regular limit of 0.08, let alone the stricter limit of 0.04 for commercial drivers. You know, I'm guessing his snowbanks weren't in a straight line either. Just guessing. Anyway, let's get to our last guest on the Stuff File program, shall we? Doreen Pengrass is the author of Chocolatour, A Quest for the World's Best Chocolate. And Doreen joins us on the line via Skype-to-Skype communications from Matlock, Manitoba. Hi, Doreen.
Hi, how are you today?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. So, obviously, you're a chocolate fan.
I am indeed.
But it's one thing to be a chocolate fan, and it's another thing to write a book about it. How did this book come to be?
Well, I am a professional freelance writer and have been so since 1993. And I moved my way into travel writing because I'm extremely passionate about travel and been writing articles for the last few years and whatnot. And I thought about doing a book, and at first I was going to do a wine travel book because I love fine wine and travel, but there'd been a lot of books done about wine travel already, but there'd never been a book done about fine chocolate, you know, and I thought I started investigating it, and I realized that this could be a new niche for people who appreciate fine artisanal chocolate. You have to go to it because it does not travel well because it doesn't have a long shelf life. So that's the exciting thing, is that once you start investigating the world of fine chocolate, you realize how big it is and how exciting it can be to go and meet these people that are making it and try their creations.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask. I mean, you when you start to investigate, when people think of chocolate, they think of, you know, the Swiss or Belgian chocolate. But you're saying that there's fine chocolate in a lot of other places, and maybe even places we wouldn't think there would be fine chocolate?
Absolutely. And, you know, this is what got me really excited, is because I went and I stayed with cocoa farmers in Peru and Ecuador, and I, you know, so I got to see how that is all done from the growing aspect. But in Peru, there are also fantastic chocolate makers. And in fact, in my book, I awarded Rosalind, chocolatier of Lima, Peru, as having the most beautiful hand-painted chocolates on earth, because he is a former, Giorgio, he's a former graphic artist, and he's taken his artistic talent and now hand paints each beautifully made chocolate. And his mother is a chocolatier, and the two of them together have created such wonderful flavors. And that's the neat thing about artisanal chocolate, is that it reflects the unique things that are grown in that place. So, for instance, one wonderful chocolatier I met in London, England, is originally from Jamaica. So he uses passion fruit and things from the tropics in his chocolates to make them stand out from the other British chocolatiers. And it's just so exciting because the flavors pop. When you eat really fresh, well-done chocolate, the flavors explode in your mouth. It's nothing like eating chocolate candy.
Now, when you talk about these chocolates that are mixed with other things, you're not talking about chocolate-filled something or other. It's whatever it is mixed in with the chocolate. Is that what you're saying?
Well, it can be both ways. You can have, like, there's several different types of chocolate. There's truffles, which are usually rolled into a ball shape. And then inside, you would have different ingredients mixed in with chocolate. Then there are things like ganache and bonbons, which are usually a chocolate shell. And then inside, you may have a puree of passion fruit or of lavender or of all kinds of exotic things. Here in Manitoba, where I live, we have a lovely chocolate maker called Constance Pop Chocolatier who makes Manitoba beet chocolate truffles. So she takes Manitoba-grown beets and she, you know, grinds them up into a fine puree and mixes them with all the wonderful things that she does and puts them into an enrobed chocolate piece. And then she also does a wonderful chocolate truffle with Manitoba grown honey, you know. So they're very creative, these chocolate people, and they learn how to take what's local and adapt it and make it into chocolate products.
Now, even though they're taking stuff that's local, chocolate, of course, can only be harvested in certain locations. It doesn't necessarily mean that you need to be where the chocolate's from to make a great chocolate, correct?
That's right. Chocolate or cocoa, we should call it cacao, because what it is you've got the cacao trees grow and they produce cocoa pods, which contain the cocoa beans, which are roasted and fermented and dried and then are made into chocolate. So they're grown 20 degrees north and south of the equator. But once those beans have been fermented, they can be transported in, you know, the burlap sacks or whatever, virtually anywhere in the world. So I've even had very good artisanal chocolate made in Iceland. And obviously it's not grown there, but he imports the bags and then he makes lovely chocolate from that.
Okay, so now the book, as I said, the subtitle, A Quest for the World's Best Chocolate. So have you found the world's best chocolate? And if so, what makes it that?
Well, that title is deliberately misleading because there is no such thing as the best chocolate, just like there is no such thing as a best wine, right? Do you drink wine? If you do, you know that you'll have one that you like to have with steak and another that you like to have with shrimp or with lobster. So it's dependent on the mood in which you are and who you're having it with, what you're eating, maybe your mood. You know, what have you done that day? Are you in the mood for something like wild and passionate, or are you in the mood for something safe and well known to you? So there are many, many fine chocolates. And what I've done in the book is I've tried to help chocolate lovers find chocolate makers that will best suit their needs, their likes, and their moods.
How does one expand their chocolate palate?
Well, you got to do it slowly. I always tell people when they want to start investigating the world of fine chocolate, that Lindt chocolate is the best place to start. You know, Lindt, it's from Switzerland. It's available widely. You can get it like at Shoppers Drug Mart and many other pharmacies and grocery stores, Whole Foods, whatever. And they make many different kinds of flavors, but they have a relatively pure chocolate. It's very fine quality, and it's also extremely affordable. So one of theirs that I really like is the dark chocolate with sea salt. And so it's just got a little bit of sea salt, and that's from France, that gives you that sweet and savory, sort of salty and sweet blend. And you match that with a glass of Malbec wine and you're in heaven.
Does chocolate mean different things to different cultures?
Yes, it does. But you know what? The chocolate is the universal language of love. And no matter where you go on the planet, you say the word chocolate and people will smile. Their eyes light up. So no matter what it may mean to them, it means something good. It means happiness. It means feel good. Because after all, when you're eating chocolate, it produces endorphins in your body. that make you feel good. It's a mood adjuster. One of the chocolate makers I met in Belgium, in Brussels, he said to me, "Doreen, I'm like a drug dealer. I make people smile every day." And that's so true, because pure chocolate is like a drug. It's got a lot of, it's actually got chemical compounds that are comparable to marijuana, just that feel goodness, you know, without all the other side effects. So if you want to feel good, grab a piece of pure dark chocolate, and it's guaranteed to make you feel better.
Now, as you say, there are a lot of books out there about wines, but not a lot of books out there about chocolate. So when you went around the world meeting these chocolatiers, was it a surprise to them that someone like yourself was as interested in their business and wanted to write about it as they were in producing it?
Well, yeah, and that's the great thing about it is chocolatiers and chocolate makers are extremely passionate people. And, you know, when they learned how passionate I was about what they were doing, you know, they would often give me 2 hours of their time, you know, take me through their shop, show me all the different flavors and things that they're doing, and take me into their world. And that's how I actually got so possessed with the excitement of chocolate is I was interviewing a fellow in Pisa, Italy, and he's the one that transformed the way I was thinking about chocolate. He taught me about the chemistry of chocolate and what a complex chemical compound it is, but how you can play with the flavors once you get to understand it. And so I've learned something very precious from almost every chocolate maker that I've met along my travels. And I intend to keep doing this for probably at least another 8 years, because my book is written in a series of 3 volumes. So the first volume that is currently out focuses on Europe and the UK as far as chocolate makers go, but it also has the chapter on the growing regions of Peru, Ecuador, and St. Lucia. But I'm currently researching volume 2, which will focus on the chocolate makers of the Americas and the Caribbean.
Wow. Now, can you even go into a local store anymore and just simply buy a regular chocolate bar off the rack?
Only if I was really desperate. Like if you know, if I was either starving or if I was going off on a road trip and didn't have any granola bars with me or something, I might grab one just for sustenance. But I can't eat cheap chocolate anymore. Like if my husband buys me just a box of commercial chocolates, it could stay in the house for months. But when I have good, fine chocolate in the house, it's calling me constantly, like, "Doreen, come and try this one, or come and try that one." It's amazing how it sort of possesses you.
And what's the chocolate that calls you the most?
Well, again, that really depends on my mood. I love Madagascar chocolate. It's got a real fruitiness to it. And same with Peruvian chocolate. If I had to pick, where do I say the best chocolate comes from? At this point in time, if you ask me that, because I'm still learning, I would say Madagascar and Peru have the chocolate that pleases my palate most.
Wow. My mouth is watering just talking to you. I'm sure the same happens when anybody takes a look at your book. The book is called Chocolatour, A Quest for the World's Best Chocolate, written by Doreen Pangrass. And Doreen, I thank you very much for being on the program with us. People can go to your website. Which website can people go to find out more information?
Well, the best place to go if they want to learn about the book is chocolatour.net. So that's chocolatour.net. You can purchase the book from there, learn more about my work, and you can also link to Amazon because the book is available on Amazon as well.
Doreen, thank you very much for being on the program.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Doreen Pangrass, author of Chocolatour, A Quest for the World's Best Chocolate. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0234, and you'll find links to Doreen's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for The Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
An unnamed man in Farmington Hills, Michigan, got a call from the Internal Revenue Service. He owed $3,854 in back taxes, the caller said, but criminal charges would be dropped if he sent the money immediately directly to the caller in the form of gift cards. The man complied. A short time later, he got a second call from Sheriff Bouchard, who informed the man that he owed $4,560 in taxes. Now, Mike Bouchard is indeed the sheriff of the county, but the man was suspicious enough to check with the sheriff's office. They assured him that the calls, including the one from the IRS, were fake and that he had been conned. The U.S. government, the city of Farmington Hills, or any other government agency is not going to contact you this way, a Farmington Hills police spokesperson said. Okay, we're going to have to give this half-wit half points for not getting stung a second time, but seriously, who in their right mind is going to pay their back taxes to the IRS in the form of gift cards? Only one type of person. That would be an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0234. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0234. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded in iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Let me leave you with these words of wisdom. Never, ever juggle ice picks while standing on your waterbed.